We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we work and live, the Awabakal and Worimi people, and pay our respects to elders past and present. We celebrate the stories, culture, and traditions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders of all communities who also work and live on this land.
You're listening to Boob to Food, the podcast with Luca McCabe and Kate Holm. There is so much noise in the parenting space.
And we don't mean the tantruming toddler. We understand it can feel confusing, conflicting, and overwhelming.
That's why we are bringing our years of experience as a midwife, nutritionist, and naturopath.
And of course, mums.
So that you can confidently navigate the roller coaster of motherhood from boob to food and beyond.
Each week, you'll hear practical wisdom, expert advice, and inspirational stories of other mums in the depths of this parenting journey.
Let's dive in. Today's episode has been brought to you by Stokey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Boob to Food, the podcast. Today you have just Kate and I. We are doing another dedicated Help Me section, and we are talking all about food allergies today. This is a question that we get asked a lot at Boob to Food, and it's really understandable that there's a lot of confusion around food allergies because the advice continues to change, which is a good thing due to new evidence coming out. But even when I started my firstborn, who is now nearly 9, on solids, the advice between him and my nearly 6-year-old drastically changed just in those 3 years. And so we're going to talk about that evidence a little bit and why it's changed. But we thought we would dedicate an entire podcast just to food allergies. And so, Kate, do you want to start us off and let us know? What is a food allergy?
Yes, and this is good for me as well because I'm about to go through this in real time. We're starting IMI on solids and yet to introduce any of the allergens. So this is a good little refresher for me. But basically a food allergy is when your body has an immune response, so an IgE-mediated immune response. So IgE is just like the type of antibody that your body releases in response to a food protein. There are the top allergens. However, you can have a food allergy to any food, really. It's just that the top allergens are the ones that are most likely to cause, or they cause the majority of the food allergies in the community. Luca, I know you have this list memorized in order. What are the top allergen foods?
Oh, I feel like I'm being put on the spotlight now. It's like a game show. So they are eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, sesame, fish, shellfish, soy, dairy, and wheat.
Correct. Yay. You win.
I win.
But yeah, basically those are the foods that are responsible for the majority of the allergies that we see. And it's a tricky one because you don't necessarily know if your child is going to have a food allergy or not until you introduce that food. There are definitely risk factors. So, you know, family history of food allergies, if you have a sibling with a food allergy, if you have other allergies to other foods, if you have, you know, that kind of atopic presentation. So you have severe eczema, for example, or asthma, those sorts of conditions all go within the same family of immune reaction as food allergies. And so they might be some indications that you'd be in a higher risk category, but even being in that higher risk category doesn't mean you definitely will develop a food allergy, and not being in that higher risk category doesn't mean that you won't develop a food allergy. So this is where it's understandable that parents feel a lot of nervousness around starting the allergen foods, because we want certainty. We want to know that our child is or isn't going to react, but it's just trial and error, which is kind of stressful.
And how does an allergy then differ to a food sensitivity or a food intolerance?
So I guess on an immune level, the difference is that it's mediated by a different part of the immune system. So where we said that a food allergy is IgE mediated, a food sensitivity or food intolerance is going to be mediated by a different part of the immune system. So you'll have IgA or IgG antibodies, which again, like for, you know, day to day, you can forget about that, put it out of your mind. It's not like relevant for as you're moving about introducing foods, but just, I guess from a biological perspective, it's just that the body is responding with a different type of antibody, and you'll see also the response can look different, but it can look quite similar. So with a true food allergy, you're going to see a reaction occur anywhere from immediate exposure up to 4 hours post-exposure, but most commonly within those first 2 hours. With a food sensitivity, you can get this more delayed and it's more of like a cumulative response. So you still can have symptoms from immediate exposure, but it's more likely going to be delayed, you know, even days post-exposure. It could be 3 to 7 days, but it's not going to be like, let's say someone has a food sensitivity to egg. It's not like you eat egg today and 7 days from now you have diarrhea. Like it's not, it doesn't really work like that. But what you get is antibodies that build up in the system. And so you might start to see gradual symptoms, or it's like you can tolerate egg on one day, but if you have egg on 3 consecutive days, then you get diarrhea, or that's just a hypothetical example. Whereas with a true food allergy, it's like you eat the egg, and if you're allergic to it, you see those symptoms within those first usually 2 hours. And then the antibodies are also going to leave the system much faster. So you're not really getting that cumulative response. However, you can get a worsening response with every allergen exposure. So not to different allergen foods, but let's stay on the egg example. If you do have an egg allergy and you eat it once, you might get a rash around the mouth. But on the next exposure, you might get full body hives. And on the next exposure, it might be anaphylaxis. Perhaps not. Again, that's entirely hypothetical. But I guess like that's sort of reassuring for parents when they are introducing these allergen foods, that you're not going to, on the first exposure, go from nothing to anaphylaxis. So you will start to get some kind of creeping indication that your child is having a level of reactivity. And that's when we would say, stop, chat to your doctor, and then make a plan. The only exception to that is, and again, unfortunately, you won't necessarily know, is that if your child does have an allergy and they've had exposure via the skin, or even in highly sensitive children, it can be through like that air exposure. So for example, staying on egg, if egg has been cooked profusely and they've had lots of exposure to those, air particles of egg, then there can already be some of that recognition set up in the immune system, where you might then see the first introduction orally, they do have a more severe reaction. It's incredibly uncommon. I don't want to say that to stress anyone out. I'm sure it will. It's the same, unfortunately, though. It's still trial and error. And so until you've had that oral exposure, we don't know truly how a child's going to react or not. So that's not to say that, you know, because it's unlikely to be anaphylactic on the first exposure orally, that you should, you know, not act with caution. When our babies are starting solids, we always want to be cautious with whatever food they're eating and sit with them and observe them and that sort of thing. And just be particularly mindful around these allergy foods, and also particularly mindful if you do sit in that high-risk category. The other main difference between a food allergy and a food sensitivity is that the food sensitivities, you can have much more, I guess, systemic and sort of low-grade reactions, although they can be quite severe as well. So you can have the like instant vomiting or diarrhea, or you could have something like eczema or behavioral issues or just generalized gut discomfort, or, you know, sort of more vague symptoms. So yeah, food sensitivities are a whole other thing. They can be controversial as well, because depending on which health professional you speak to, how you're measuring them, there's sort of mixed opinions on whether or not they have validity. So again, speak with your health professional and someone who feels aligned with you. That probably deserves a whole other podcast episode in itself. But yes, food sensitivities are not the same as food allergies.
And I guess the main difference between the two is that a food sensitivity or intolerance can't have an anaphylaxis reaction.
Yes, they're not going to be life-threatening, whereas a food allergy could absolutely be life-threatening if someone had that anaphylactic response.
What about F pies? What's that?
Ah, yes. I know this well because my eldest had it. So F pies is food protein induced enterocolitis syndrome. Maybe I win the game show too.
I think no one does win. That was a mouthful.
And so this is essentially, it's a non-IgE mediated food reaction. And it is, so it's not a true food allergy. And it is isolated only to the gastrointestinal tract. So FPIES is a weird and wonderful one that they actually don't fully understand why it happens, like, yeah, really what's going on in the same way. It's unfortunately something that you can't test for, again, other than through trial and error. And if anyone has a child with FPIES, you'll know that you really do not want to do that trial and have an error because it is horrible. So essentially with FPIES, you get this delayed hypersensitivity response. So usually it's within the first 6 hours. It can be slightly more prolonged and it can definitely be slightly shorter as well, but it's not going to happen at that immediate exposure. And the main symptom is profuse vomiting, like profuse. When Jude would, so his trigger food was banana. And so, sorry, just to backtrack a little bit, it can often be triggered by some of the top allergen foods, but there's a whole spectrum of other foods that aren't considered to be those top allergens that are also common triggers. So like rice can be a trigger.
I was going to say that are common first baby foods,
yeah,
as
exactly.
Well.
Banana is a common known trigger. Dairy, oats. Definitely. What was that? Sorry, oats.
Oats.
Yeah, okay. And there's, with FPIES, like food allergies, the trigger food can actually be anything, but there are these more likely foods. So yeah, for Jude, it was banana. And I actually only cottoned onto it because I had a patient who had FPIES, not triggered by banana. And basically, so you serve them the food and then hours later, there's this profuse vomiting. And truly, you just think, how does such a tiny being have so much fluid in their body? It's awful, like projectile, and with pain as well. So for him, I'd always know that it was about to happen because he would be like grunting and groaning and like writhing around in the bed, and then you'd get this awful vomiting, and they vomit until they are limp and floppy, and it's awful. It can also be followed about 24 hours later by very strange mucousy diarrhea. But with FPIES, there's no other systemic symptoms. So you don't get a rash. You don't get, like, it's not potentially going to go to anaphylaxis. So it's this, yeah, weirdly isolated to the gastrointestinal tract. Like I said, there's no testing. So you can't do a blood test or a skin prick test or anything like that. And children typically grow out of it by the time they're about 3 years old. Again, that reintroduction, because you don't really know if they're going to have a reaction or not, is very stressful as a parent of a child who's had that response. So we, the first couple of times he had banana, I was like, oh no, we've got gastro. And then like, cause you don't know. And it looks like that. That's the thing. And so often these children will present like to the emergency department because the vomiting's so profuse and they're so young. And understandably it would be diagnosed as a, you know, acute gastroenteritis because that's how it appears. And it can be like so long after food that you don't necessarily connect the dots. And so that happened a couple of times. And then I saw this patient that had FPIES, a diagnosis, and I was like, oh, hang on a minute. And then we spoke to our doctor and they agreed that it sounded likely. But they were like, well, it's really hard to say at this stage because there'd only been two reactions. And then we said to like our family, please don't do any banana. And then one day my mother-in-law fed him banana and then he had a reaction. And so I was like, okay, well, that sort of confirms it in my mind. And then a few days later, I accidentally bananaed him because I'd been giving him, I'd been giving him these, like, he was a very bad eater. If you've listened to previous episodes, we struggled a lot with getting him onto solids. And so I was like, I'm just going to try like those baby puffs to see if he can do it, like if he can put food to his mouth and eat it. And he'd been eating this particular flavor. No, that's right. It was a different, you know, the how like per age, they're different shapes. So like for 6 months, they're like the long strips. And then for over 9 months, they become like the finger food sort of ones. So he'd been doing the long puffs and they were fine. And then I switched to the same flavor of the finger food variety and didn't read the ingredients because I assumed it was the same. Mm-hmm. And actually it contained banana. And so he had another reaction. So then after those four reactions, yeah, doctor was like, yes, this sounds like F pies. So we were off banana and he didn't have another reaction. But then yes, you have to come around to the reintroduction. So I guess like with a food allergy, that you do want to do with the guidance of a health professional. Food allergy is going to be treated much differently to F pies though, because you can still have that anaphylactic or more severe allergic reaction if there has been an allergy.
Mm. Well, you said you've never had gastro, but you've had F pies. Yeah. So I feel like that's worse.
Well, the good thing about it, if there is a good thing, is you know it's not contagious. So I can hold my vomiting baby and, you know, covered in all of the things, and I'm not also freaking out that it's going to be my turn next.
So I thought I would share some tips on if you are ready to start some allergens, what you need to think of before you introduce it. So one of the biggest things is you need to make sure that your baby is feeling well. Mm. You don't really want to introduce an allergenic food if your baby's sick or if they've got diarrhea or gastro, or even if they're really tired or grumpy in that particular day. Just save it for another day, because you want to be able to tell if they're having a reaction. The other thing is that we'll go into this, but allergens are recommended to start quite early and frequently. However, we do think that when babies start solids that you should do a week or two without any allergenic foods, just to make sure that your baby tolerates food in general. Mm. You don't know how they're going to digest that food. And so, you know, if their stool changes, for example, you don't want to be questioning if that's a sensitivity or an intolerance. You just want to have some of those low allergenic foods. And so your meats and vegetables are really great, you know, first foods. And then we'll work into the allergens after that. Some other things to know that when you do introduce an allergenic food, we'd recommend doing it at home, especially for that first few exposures. We hear a lot of people having peanut parties at the hospital, like mothers groups literally sitting at the hospital car park, introducing peanuts, everyone having them and waiting for a reaction. I mean, if you're going to do that, you want to do it on the second or third exposure, not the first, like Kate said. I mean, you can get a reaction, but it's more likely to be the second or third. So don't waste your time. But doing it at home is really important. We don't want to be doing it at somewhere like a restaurant or daycare where your baby might not have your full attention. And you also probably don't want to be panicked in a restaurant having an allergic reaction. The other things just to know are we want to introduce one allergenic food at a time. So when it comes to introducing foods to your baby, you do not need to introduce one food at a time, generally speaking. Mm. So, you know, when you're introducing meats and vegetables and things like that, unless you're suspicious, I mean, you have a strong family history of an allergy to lamb or something random that's not on the top list, you can definitely mix and match all of those other foods. But the top allergens, you want to give them in isolation, so by themselves, or mix them with a food your baby's had numerous times. So if your baby's had sweet potato a few times and they're totally fine with it, then sure, you can introduce some peanut butter or egg into the sweet potato when you offer it, because that's the allergen you're testing. As Kate mentioned as well, when it comes to introducing allergens, it can take usually within 2 hours for a severe reaction. Usually it's in that first like 5 to 10 minutes, but we want to give at least 2 hours of monitoring your baby. So you don't want to introduce these allergens when your baby's due for a nap. Yeah. You want to be monitoring them. And so, you know, there's no right or wrong time of the day to do this, but I would do it, I guess, when your baby's just waking up from a nap, because most 6-month-old babies are not lasting much longer than 2 hours before the next nap. Unless they're napping on you and you're watching them, then that's fine. And I guess, yeah, that's my main things I would add. Then we go into when we should introduce allergens. And this is the bit that has caused a lot of confusion and contention over the times because the research is still changing. And like I mentioned in the intro, when my firstborn, who is nearly nine, started solids, the advice then was to withhold all allergens until he was five. Then when my daughter started solids, who is now six, the advice was to introduce all allergens before 12 months. So it completely changed. So as you can imagine, it's quite confusing. Now the advice is changing even more so and saying that there's emerging evidence that introducing allergens before 6 months is beneficial. However, there's a big caveat to that that we want to talk about because as we promote all the time on Boop to Food, most babies aren't ready for solids until 6 months of age. And so this recommendation that's coming out to say introduce solids between 4 and 6 months, if you actually read it, it actually says when they meet the signs of readiness. And so they're saying this because they know a lot of people are still starting at 4 months of age. It's not our recommendation, and we've done lots of other podcasts and resources on why we don't recommend starting solids at 4 months of age and why we recommend waiting until they meet their signs of readiness, which is generally around 6 months of age. And so if you actually read this research, it's still saying to wait till they're developmentally ready to start solids. It's not saying to do it beforehand. And the research is also isolated to high-risk babies, which is what Kate mentioned before. So babies that have severe eczema or other allergies or a sibling or parent with a food allergy, they're the only ones that are recommended to do this. And it's also under guidance of your health practitioner. And so if your baby does fall into that and they are not yet starting solids, then it's worth having a chat to your GP or healthcare nurse about either introducing those allergens really early, like as the first food and literally just a tiny smear inside their mouth, or doing allergy testing prior to that. If it's a really severe allergy, that is something that can be done.
We'll be back after this short break. Today's episode has been brought to you by Stokey. We are longtime fans of Stokey, and now they have just released their new chair, the Nomi. We absolutely love this chair for so many reasons. Not only is it ergonomically designed, but it grows with your child from newborn for life, and it is so lightweight that you can even hang it from your table when you inevitably have to clean up the floor after starting solids. It is incredibly comfortable and allows your child to sit nice and close to you at the family table, which you know we are such big fans of as well. You can use the unique link in the show notes to receive a free newborn set with every Nomi bundled purchase that's valued at $138.90. The link is valid until midnight, the 1st of April, 2024. Visit the unique link in our show notes for more information. Now let's get back to today's episode. And I guess like the takeaway of the research as well, because there's still no absolutes. And even though we've seen these guidelines change, we're also seeing rates of allergies increase. And Australia is one of the highest like allergy nations in the world. So we don't have it perfect. It's not an exact science. There's so many variables amongst families, like with their genetics, with their other health factors, with the environment, with like this, you could never, or maybe I don't never say never, but at this stage, we have not isolated the perfect solution to entirely prevent food allergies. So all we can do is make general recommendations that are based on the research that we have right now. And so we do know that that introduction before their first birthday of these top allergen foods, if they're introduced and then continue to be exposed, those children tend to have lower rates of food allergies than those who are introduced later. So yeah, it's still, you've got to look at the context of what's going on for your family. And like Luca said, if you do fall into a high risk category, it would be worth having a conversation with whoever your chosen health professional is about whether you should have a different plan in place. And a lot of this information, because it has only been done on certain foods, we're kind of extrapolating that it would apply to all of those foods that we like, all of those top allergen foods, but we actually don't know that for sure. And in other countries around the world, the list of the top allergen foods is different and bigger. So it's like, you know, we're still the people, but like in one country, you'll be told one thing, and in Australia, you're told another thing. And so, yeah, take it all with a grain of salt and use it to inform the way you move forward with your child. And then if you do have any concerns or questions, don't feel like you have to figure it out on your own. Definitely outsource. We highly recommend outsourcing any of the thinking when you're in this stage of life.
Yeah. And I guess all of this has come about by, it was called the LEAP study, which was all about peanuts. And so like Kate said, we only really know about peanuts. We don't really know about any other allergens. Mm. But basically that study, which was in 2015, which was when my son was born, which is why everything changed, said that when peanuts were introduced at an early age before 12 months, those babies were 80% less likely to have a peanut allergy than those that did avoid until the 5 years. So 80% is huge, and that's why the research just completely shifted around, which thank goodness, because imagine having to avoid all these foods till they're five.
It's a long time
to not introduce allergens.
Yeah, well,
most of them are so nutritious too.
Yeah, it was not a large amount, so it doesn't technically count as an allergen exposure. And actually, maybe this is a good segue, but I accidentally have exposed Immy to soy because we had beef short ribs, and it was like in an Asian kind of thing, and we gave her just the bone to munch on. And I was like, oh, whoops. There was definitely like tamari in the sauce, so she would have likely had some exposure. And anyway, I should have been thinking about it and I wasn't. But imagine like 5 years.
Third baby.
third baby things. But if you had to wait till five, and that's like, you know, things change socially, and like your kids are not necessarily like always close as they are when they're 6 to 12 months. So I can't imagine how stressful that would be, trying to keep all these foods out of the home. And especially then, imagine like if Flynn, like you've waited until he's five, and then Florence comes along and Flynn's over five and eating peanut butter, but Florence is four and wants peanut. Like how, that'd be really challenging.
I know. I don't know if anyone actually did it. I remember I was so naive back then. I was young and I just had no idea. I didn't really even know about the research at all. It wasn't until I started looking and I thought, oh, I wasn't meant to feed him those things, but I did. Whoops. Anyway, did the right thing in the end, didn't I? That's the thing. It's going to differ for everyone, because there's going to be families that eat a lot of peanuts and it's just easy to keep that in your diet. And then you might talk about a different food like fish and you might not eat fish, and that's really hard to keep in the diet. And so there's definitely caveats to this, and it can be, I guess we've got to just use our intuition as well, and also just what we eat as a family. And obviously though, if your baby does react to something, then avoid it the aim of the game. And if, I guess, talking about a reaction, when we're talking about a reaction, what signs we are looking for, and you kind of went through it before, but I guess what our mind goes to is that anaphylaxis, that they're having a full-blown, you know, can't breathe reaction like you see on TV all the time. But what you'll most likely find is that it will start with something like the hives, or it will start with a rash, or it's hard to tell with a baby if they've got like a tingling, itchy mouth, but you might notice that they're really irritable and they still just start like rubbing at their mouth or tongue or trying to sort of scratch their mouth. You might then look in their mouth and notice that their tongue looks a bit swollen or really red or just different to normal. But other than like those sort of visible signs, it can be hard for a baby to say that they're having a reaction, because obviously it can be hard to see those things if they're internal, like an itchy throat, for example. The other things is they might get some wheezing or trouble breathing. If your baby gets a reaction to a food, you need to immediately stop that food. You need to go wipe their face, their mouth. If they are having an anaphylaxis and they can't breathe, then you need to call 000 or 911 if you're in another country. Or I don't know what other numbers there are, but call emergency services. If your baby's just got like a hive reaction, you don't necessarily need to call the emergency. Like, you would then just move them away from the food, wash them down, keep observing them, make sure they're breathing okay. And if they are, then that's fine. And the hives will just go down that by themselves. But then you would want to book in with your general practitioner or pediatrician and then plan next steps. So you don't want to reintroduce that food, because like we've mentioned a few times, if you do that, the reaction is going to be worse, generally speaking, the next time you introduce it. So that's how allergens kind of work, is that the more you introduce them if there is an allergy, the reaction will continue to get worse. So don't re-offer, and then usually your GP or pediatrician will then refer you to an allergist who will then do some official testing, and then they will be the ones that work out the reintroduction plan with you. Yeah. Because that's the thing, most of these allergens are outgrown, which is really good to know.
I just want to highlight as well, we work a lot in the clinic with families who've had whether food allergies, food sensitivities, you know, it can be if they're avoiding foods to fill those nutritional gaps or to work on the immune health and the gut health. We've had a number of families recently who have had a reaction and they've stopped introducing that food as per the advice of their GP, and their GP's referred them to an allergist, for which there are hugely long wait times usually, only to get to that appointment and be told that they need to reintroduce the food because they haven't had enough exposure. Now, I was talking about this with our clinicians because the consensus is definitely not there among GPs, among the allergists. And so I would recommend that if you're in this situation, that you definitely, like, you stop, like we've said, speak to your GP. They might advise you to reintroduce, you know, and see if there is another reaction. They might advise you to do that, you know, under their guidance, like in their practice. They might send you straight to an allergist. And then if that's the case, I would recommend calling when you're speaking and making that appointment and just ask if there's going to be anything like that, because we've had families wait 6 months for an appointment only to be told, we can't do any testing, we can't see you yet, you need to go home and have, so they've recommended an eighth of a teaspoon of whatever the food allergen is on day one, and then double each day until you reach one teaspoon. And that, again, is very stressful for families if you've watched your baby have an allergic reaction. So, I definitely recommend, like we said, if you've got any concern, you stop. You don't want there to be a, you know, rapidly progressed reaction the next time. Speak to your healthcare practitioner, but do just ask some of those questions, because you don't want to then, wait 6 months or more, only to be told, actually, we're not going to do the testing for you yet.
Mm. I know the wait times are stressful, aren't they? They're so long. Mm-hmm. It's hard because they need some kind of mid-ground.
Yeah.
Maybe someone needs to invent that, some kind of mid-ground testing place, and then you see the allergist or something after that. Mm-hmm. But yes, like I was saying, though, a lot of them are outgrown, which is really good. So most children will outgrow allergies to milk, soy, wheat and eggs, but your allergies to things like tree nuts and peanuts aren't as outgrown, unfortunately. And then sesame, shellfish and fish tend to be your more lifelong. But then shellfish is a bit confusing because that tends to only appear in adulthood. Mm. Anyway, they're all a bit confusing. Good news is a lot of them are outgrown. And so that is when you would work with that guidance and hopefully reintroduce, and it has been outgrown. But when we come to actually introducing the allergen foods, now your baby is ready for solids, you're ready to start them on allergens, you've introduced some low allergenic foods and you're feeling ready to go. I guess the tip is that you start very small. So you would start with about an eighth of a teaspoon, quarter of a teaspoon even, just a very, very small amount of that food. So if we're talking about peanut butter, for example, you could literally just put a little bit on your finger and then pop it in their mouth. And then you would just wait 10 to 15 minutes, because that's when that severe reaction is going to happen. And hopefully if they've only had a small amount, the reaction won't be as bad as if they've had a whole bowl of peanut butter. Mm-hmm. And so do that, wait. If they haven't had a reaction that time, you're probably going to be okay, and then you can continue and offer a bit more. There's actually not really much research as to how much of an allergen is considered enough to be an exposure. From what we've read, it's about a quarter of a teaspoon. So it's, and they don't even have to ingest that quarter of a teaspoon, because you can get an allergy just from popping it in your tongue. So as long as it kind of hits their mouth, that's good. Their old recommendation was to put allergens on the skin and do a test that way, but that's very outdated advice and not recommended. And that actually can lead to allergies if you're putting food proteins on the skin. So that's something to be mindful of when you're looking at any baby skincare, is to be mindful that until they've been exposed to that allergen orally, that you don't want to be introducing that allergen through the skin if there's any food proteins in the skincare, which is, I mean, babies don't often need skincare unless they have some issues like eczema and things, but that's something we can help with in our clinic and recommend some products that don't contain food proteins. So, and then with baby-led weaning, you know, if you're doing something like egg, for example, and you can't just pop that in their mouth like peanut butter, you could just offer your baby a really small amount of it. So you might do something like an omelette and cut a really small amount, help your baby guide it to their own mouth and then let them eat it that way. When you're introducing an allergen, the recommendation is at least three exposures to test if there's an allergy. So you introduce three times. It doesn't have to be in a row. So, you know, it can be because sometimes that's easier with leftovers, especially if you're opening a tin of oysters or something random that you want to just do it 3 days in a row, totally fine. But it doesn't have to be that way. But just be mindful that if you are introducing, for example, egg and then the next day peanut, you can do that. The only thing is that you won't see, you won't know about a sensitivity that way. And some foods aren't likely to cause a sensitivity, but some are more likely, like your dairy and things like that. So dairy and wheat, you might want to do that slower introduction to those foods because you might just be monitoring for any signs of sensitivity or intolerance, especially if your baby has had a sensitive gut before starting solids. But you can definitely do that because, like we've said numerous times now, an allergy will present itself in that first up to 4 hours. And so you can do a different one each day if you want to. There's no right or wrong with that.
Yeah. And you also don't have to rush. Like we've had some patients again come through the clinic who thought they had to do it all immediately. And so by 7 months had introduced all of the allergens. And
how?
I know.
I want to know how.
Yeah.
There's 10 different tree nuts. There's so many.
Yeah. You don't have to rush. So the recommendation is before the first birthday. So take it slowly. We still want to be, you know, doing it mindfully. And if we can get them out of the way, it's probably great even just for you from a culinary perspective to be like, right, we can just offer and cook whatever. But yeah, there's no rush, even though the recommendation in its like kind of broad sense is early and often. That definition of early is still before the first birthday. So you've got some time up your sleeve to just navigate starting solids in general, as well as introducing the allergens at a pace that feels comfortable for you, for your baby, for your family, for wherever you're at. And also, actually, we should mention Taste Bubs is a really great company that has like an allergen starter pack. So if you're thinking, how on earth am I going to introduce some of these foods, they've got basically freeze-dried, like powdered versions of not all of the allergens, and it escapes me exactly which ones, but we can pop it in the show notes.
If you get my collab with them and Le Puree, you do include all the allergens that way.
Yeah.
Because we've got the shellfish and fish.
Yes.
And the purees as well. So that's another option.
And so that's kind of like a done for you. Don't have to think like allergen introduction program essentially, which if you're feeling overwhelmed by this, then that might be something that's good to explore. So again, you just can outsource the thinking because you've got enough to think about as a mum.
Absolutely. I think too, a lot of people ask us which order you should introduce the allergens in. There's no right or wrong order. One thing that we will say though is because we know the research has been done on peanuts, that's probably what I would recommend to start first, just because we know that that's helpful. Then we would do egg because egg's also got a little bit of research around introducing early. Then I think it really just depends on your family's diet and what you want to introduce next. Guys might eat a lot of almond meal and you might want to introduce almonds, or you might introduce macadamias because you guys really like that. So with tree nuts, you do have to introduce them pretty much all separately, which is time consuming. And there are a lot of them. And, you know, try not to beat yourself up. Like I remember when I think Flynn was like 6 or something and we went to mum's for Christmas and she had chestnuts. And I was like, I think my kids have ever had chestnuts, you know. And then I thought, oh, like, imagine they had a reaction.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the recommendation. I don't hear of
many people with a chestnut allergy.
No. Our inbox will be flooded after this with people with a chestnut allergy. The recommendation is that you need to introduce them all separately. And the reason for that is that the food protein does look slightly different. So you could, for example, have an allergy to chestnut, but not to pistachio. So you need to be able to separate what the reaction is to. If you're in a low risk category, in like totally, you have to use your own discretion here. You can get like some mixed nut butters or blend up your own nut meals, and that could be a way to introduce them, you know, a group of them at once. However, if your child does have a reaction, you're going to have to go back and do them all separately because you won't know which nut they were reacting to. So if they don't have a reaction though, then you can continue to introduce the mixed nut butter or mixed nut meal. And actually a mum in our subscription group had a clever idea of like saving the, they must rotate through different nut butters in their family. And so, you know, you get to the like hard bit at the bottom of the jar. She was saving all of that and just mixed it into a mixed paste to introduce to her baby. I thought that was clever, no waste solution.
Yeah. And I guess with your nuts, there are some nuts that have what's called like a co-allergy. So for example, cashews and pistachios, if your baby reacts to cashews, then you'd want to talk to your GP about the pistachio thing. And then same with walnuts and pecans. So yeah, introduce them separately, but there are some that kind of group
cross-react together.
Yeah. Cross-react, yeah. But if your baby doesn't have a reaction, the next thing just to speak about quickly is about keeping them in the diet. So this is a really big thing, and a lot of people kind of forget about this, is that the recommendation is early and often introduce at least three times, but then keep them in regular rotation in your baby's diet. The research around this is very grey, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more research that comes out in the coming years. But currently the recommendation is to keep these allergens in regular rotation in your baby's diet at least twice a week until they turn five, which can seem, I mean, it's not really possible, I don't think.
Yeah,
to be
it's a lot. I mean, I don't eat oysters twice a week. That sounds lovely, but it's not really happening.
My takeaway from that is do what you can do. Have it in the back of your mind. You know, especially things that are, I guess, more those common top allergens like your peanuts and eggs and things like that. If your baby likes them, if you guys eat them, just be mindful to have it in the back of your mind that, yeah, they do need this regular exposure to these foods to keep that tolerance to these foods. And that's what the research has said.
I'm thinking about this in the context of my own kids. So I've got a, you know, just 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. There is absolutely no way that either of them, if I was like, guys, we're having prawns, like they'd be like, I don't like prawns. Like that wouldn't happen. And like Bowie currently doesn't like peanut butter and Jude currently doesn't like almond butter. So, and then the other thing that we often support through the clinic too are like plant-based families or families who have restrictions for other reasons. And if these foods aren't part of your regular family diet, again, there's no certainty around these guidelines. It's not like if you do this, you will prevent allergies, and if you don't do this, you will get an allergy. So we can only do what we can do, as Lucas said. And like if you're plant-based, for example, so you don't ever eat seafood, you don't ever eat egg or dairy, then it's up to your discretion as to whether, firstly, like some families feel really conflicted about introducing those allergens at all, which is understandable depending on, you know, the reasons why they're avoiding those foods. And if they do make the choice to introduce them as like the allergy trial, it may not be feasible to keep them in the diet, you know, twice a week until they're five. So yeah, hear the recommendation and then apply it to your family in whatever way you can.
Took the words out of my mouth. Anyway, I think that's kind of mentioning everything that we need to mention in a podcast about introducing allergens. If you guys do have any questions, we are always available on Instagram, or you can email us or join our support group where you have access to us 24/7. But yeah, and we'll pop all of the resources in the show notes as well.
We also have our book Milk to Meals, which goes into this in a lot more detail too. And we do have our online clinic where you can get that one-on-one guidance with the girls. So as I said, whether that is that you've identified that there's an allergic reaction and you need support around making sure there's no gaps in your baby's diet or figuring out how to modify the diet to avoid those foods. We can also do testing around food sensitivities and do things to help support the gut and the immune system. So yes, outsource, outsource, outsource. Don't try to do it all from home. It can be very confusing, very stressful, and we're here to support you however we can.
We also have a free allergen tracker, which you can download on the Boob to Food website. We'll also pop it in the show notes, and that's a really good way of just keeping track of when you introduce the allergens, if they've had a reaction or not, and I guess, you know, taking that mental load off a little bit for you as well. So yeah, we'll pop all those details in the show notes. Thank you for listening to Boob to Food, the podcast. We hope this episode made you feel inspired, confident, and less overwhelmed in your parenting journey.
Head to the show notes for all the resources mentioned on today's episode. And if you loved this podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
See you next week. Bye.